Hi everyone, and welcome to another Profound Decisions podcast. I'm here with Andy Raff and Graham Jameson, and they're going to talk about arcane projections. Since that's a fairly specialist subject, I'm going to try, and probably fail, to let them do all the talking. But before I hand you over to them, a quick intro for those that aren't familiar with the subject. Arcane projections are a way for magicians in Empire to create new or unique magical effects that aren't in the big library of rituals on the wiki. They've been a part of Empire since the beginning, but they've always been really logistically demanding. And because of that, we've had to make a number of significant changes to the way we handle them, so that we can cope with the level of demand in a game the size of Empire. So, Andy, do you want to pick up the story?
So, in the start of 2018, we changed the system and made arcane projections a downtime activity. You still submit your arcane projection submission, request, what have you, via our computer systems, but we have significantly more time in the car on the drive to the event to talk about which ones are going to pass and how they will work and so on and so forth.
An important point to bear in mind with arcane projections is even though they are effective, they are all a one shot, so they're not guaranteed to pass next time or anything like that. At the end of the day, they do provide a certain amount of influence on the game, even if it isn't a one shot. They are all effectively little bundles of rules that go out the door that do not exist other than in that little bundle.
And we've certainly regretted a bunch of them in the past.
Oh, yes. Yes. I've got some of that noted down to talk about later. And because we make mistakes. Obviously, we make mistakes. We are still, despite all evidence to the contrary, human. So, yes, things go wrong. We make mistakes.
So you get your arcane projection on Friday, I'm pretty confident.
Yes, Friday before time in, they should be ready.
They should be ready. And then you have a physical object in the field that says you can perform this magical effect and details all of the rules, mechanic details, in exactly the same sort of level of detail as we would a formulaic ritual that exists on the wiki that anybody can cast.
They also these days have a proper system ID that points to the correct details on the actual database.
They're pretty easy to access in theory. Anybody who has a rank in ritual lore can submit an arcane projection, but they are not cheap. We intentionally set the mana cost on them to be high. It's at 10 mana crystals. It's roughly 1.5 times what a player can get from a mana site.
If I recall, some of the earlier versions, different ratios of rates of return.
I'm reasonably happy where we are at the minute. And once you've submitted your arcane projection, which you do through your character screen on the franchise's website, we've got three outcomes now.
Let's see, we do pass, we do half refund, and we do full refund.
Yeah.
So pass obviously passes the arcane projection. Full refund, let me come back to full refund. Half refund is the most commonly given out reason for a failure, which is simply that your ritual is not appropriate for whatever reason. For example, if you're casting some kind of summer ritual that wants to completely desiccate a land and just cause some kind of a famine, that is not a particular summer effect, so is not going to pass in summer. Trying to come up with an obvious fail there was surprisingly hard.
Particularly as we don't want to necessarily reference things people have actually submitted.
Yes.
So, full refund. When do we give out full refunds?
Full refunds tend to be when something has failed reason other than something that you could reasonably be expected to find on the wiki. Here's an example, and despite what Andy's just said, I am going to use an actual example. So this was a divination ritual that someone wanted to cast to be able to get an advanced look at what was going on in the battlefield, which is, in theory, something that should be able to be done by a day ritual. The problem is, our ability to actually mechanically support that effect is not great. We gave it a try initially, and in the end we had to turn around and say, actually, we can't actually continue to support this ritual. So we cut it down. So now that ritual, well, when the person originally resubmitted it, it failed with a full refund. And the reason for that is it should be possible. Because of the logistics reasons, it's not possible.
So our most common reason for a full refund is we can't support it.
Exactly. We'd love to, but we can't.
And with that particular example, the fact that we even tried it out seems
yeah,
to
we did.
Support it.
Which we will do. We'll do on the most edge of edge cases, but we obviously can't do every time.
There's a slightly less common reason we might do that, which is I can think of one set of rituals that we pass because we want to look at how they would work effectively and what implications they would have. And then over winter, had a long discussion about them. I'm thinking of the mass farm in chat.
Yeah, there were some ritual styles, particularly just territory-based buffs that provided an enhancement to everyone within the territory have generally not worked well. We've tried them a few times, but there's some stacking problems and there's some scaling problems.
One of the things I think that leads into is something I was keen to sort of bring up on this podcast. Arcane projections aren't entirely a science. There can be a scientific attitude to them. If there's a ritual on the wiki that you want to duplicate with some slight changes, then often that is easier for us to evaluate on face value. I say often, not always, because sometimes what a player thinks is a minor change to an existing ritual is actually a massive change to an existing ritual. But it's an art, not a science, for the most part. We sit down and we argue sometimes extensively about some of the arcane projections, particularly some of the stranger or more unique ones that come up.
One of the questions that got asked on Facebook, someone asked for some examples of rituals. And whilst I'm not prepared to provide any actual examples of rituals, what I did think would be useful is some common categories of APs that get submitted. And to an extent, the reason I bring this up now is it does... Sometimes there is sheer maths involved and sometimes there simply is not.
What would be useful if you'd made some notes, for example, you could refer?
Yes, conveniently, I have. So, top of the list of common categories of APs, personal curses. So this tends to be, I want to cast this curse on this person. It will be pretty tailored to that individual, to whatever needs they actually want. So we do need to check them for a few things, because it's not uncommon for them to attempt a breach of larger Empire design premises. The most common one that I see is an effect that wants to silence someone, that wants to mean that they can't speak or anything like that. At a higher level, that is an effect that we have excluded from our game. Even if you've run out of hits, if you're down and bleeding to death, you're still able to talk and you're still able to scream and cry for help. Even as you're being executed, you're being able to scream and cry for help. We've not put in any kind of silence spell or anything that silences you at all. It's something that we do not put in our game. Your ability to tell a player to stop role-playing is something we have deliberately decided not to include.
Similarly, it's an area where we often see role-playing effects. We won't pass because they amount to mind control. Telling players how they have to act rather than suggesting things that they feel is often kills an arcane projection style dead.
Yeah, and indeed that leads into the second most common category, which is area auras. Again, these are pretty quick and simple to go through, and particularly if there's not a mechanical effect attached to it. But again, there are some odd little things that you just need to be aware of that just are incompatible with our game design. Frequently, these are easily tweakable. After that, we get to simple personal enchantments. So this is stuff like grant me this skill or give me +3 winter lore or so on and so forth. These are some of the most mechanical rituals that exist in our game. We actually have formulas on spreadsheets to be able to calculate how much those cost. So those are very easy. They are quite crunchy, but they are quick and easy for me to do, at least on a mechanical side.
Yeah, okay. They're quick and easy for you to do, but they are they're an example that often brings up some serious discussions about whether ritual magic can grant you a certain skill or not, how that would even work.
If it's appropriate within the realm in question. So after simple personal enchantments, we get onto rituals. I could have put these in a later category, but I decided to put them in a category all by themselves.
Because they deserve a category all by themselves.
They deserve a category all by themselves. We get, on average, about 1 to 4 rituals per event attempting to create some kind of fort. Of those, almost all of them are attempting to create a fort in a coastal location. But we do get some sort of other ones as well. We actually just have some standard text that we now paste in for the fail response. Fort rituals cannot be done without the aid of an Eternal. There is no point in submitting an arcane projection to create a fort ritual.
To be fair, though, when we started out, we weren't as clear on that as we could have been.
Absolutely.
We are now, I feel. We've updated some of the existing fort rituals to make it more explicit.
The text online is quite explicit. I just felt it was worth explicitly underlining on this podcast. That is not a thing. So campaign affecting rituals plot is the next category. So this is mostly divination rituals. They're very hard for us to deal with because obviously these are far more ephemeral than some of your other more crunchy rituals. They want to know information about a plot, or they want to divine what to do next on a plot. And I can see a lot of positives to trying to take a proactive step here. However, sometimes this can also be quite hard. For starters, we have to try and identify which plot the player is even talking about. Obviously, Andy has a pretty good familiarity with all plot running in the game, but even he has his limits.
It's also worth pointing out there that often the information that they give us will be incredibly clear to the player about which plot it is and incredibly cryptic to us, because players tend to assume a kind of omniscience on our part. So there's a kind of assumption that we'll know what plot they're talking about, and often we don't.
To be honest, though, the divination stuff, just to go off on a slight tangent, is an area where we often disagree.
Yep, we do.
I'm much more comfortable with allowing a ritual that determines a specific piece of information once, because I'm not worried about codification or anything like that, because I'm much more happy to say you can't codify that because you've got a ritual to find a specific piece of information. You should not use that as a precedent for saying we can now discover this information for any subject.
By contrast, I'm always worried about codification. It's not uncommon for us to receive, not a complaint, but I've certainly received one or two arcane projections which have had a complaint written into them about how they know this is possible and how unfair it was that something else has been failed because something worked one time but didn't work another.
It's a weird place to put this, but it is worth stressing that again. An arcane projection is not a precedent.
Yeah, there's a widespread assumption from the players that effectively they're sort of discovering the laws of magic. Not widespread, but you certainly see it from a few people, that effectively every arcane projection that passes establishes a precedent about what the laws of magic are for the world, even though we very explicitly say that's not the case. And what you're actually doing when you get an AP, that is true when you get a ritual to a certain extent, but when you get an AP, what you're doing is taking advantage of a certain set of circumstances.
Before we drift too wildly off topic.
Yeah, sorry, man.
To drift back to what this was. The other thing that I want to hit up on with campaign affecting rituals that for plot is that occasionally they come in for plots which we have not written. This can be plots that exist in players' backgrounds. We've had at least a couple for plots that have come up at player events, and so on and so forth. And as you can imagine, that is incredibly hard to absolutely impossible for us to provide any kind of response for. Arcane projections are not a good way of finding out what a person who you made up in your background is doing or was doing at any given time. So next set after that, campaign affecting rituals that affect war and economics. So these tend to be relatively simple to cost because they should have a relatively crunchy effect, which I can plug through one spreadsheet or another to people to produce a result for. However, they can be not so simple for us to allow. They tend to be quite big impact, and even on a one-off, it needs a lot of consideration to allow it or not. The next two categories are where the stuff of taking up our time with getting these processed starts to come really in. So this is rituals that break our rules. We get about 3 to 4 of these events. So common themes I've written down are, I'd like a ritual that means the next ritual ignores this rule about rituals.
Meta magic
and things like that. Which
now, remind me, Graham, you love multipliers.
Multipliers are a danger. Multipliers and free things are two very dangerous concepts when costing anything up. If something multiplies something, you need to make sure it's the only multiplier, because as soon as you start multiplying other multipliers, things start to get really big really fast.
And that's one of the reasons we are very, very, very cautious about what you might call meta magic effects.
Yeah. And if you look at a lot of our effects, you'll actually see that. Rituals don't double the production of a farm. Rituals add a number of ranks to that farm. Adding is a lot safer than doubling in general.
But I was also thinking in terms of a ritual that makes the next ritual better.
Yeah. That is also very hard to quantify, but I've seen that ritual submitted.
So have I, so I erased it.
The other example was something that you cannot do. For example, you cannot just create a ritual to send something to an Eternal without that Eternal consenting to it or agreeing to it in some way. But we still get ones that are occasionally like, I know that the Eternal hasn't consented to this, but I really want to send it to them. Yeah, there's often backgrounds and reasons as to why the breach will be fine, but they don't generally pass. And the final category is something completely new. This easily is the one that takes up most of our time. So it'll be an exist that doesn't exist in the current rituals of the game. They fall into two categories, which is the absolutely absurd. The example I made up, although I didn't make it up from that far away, let me tell you, was I'd like to transform this pineapple into a person, which are instantly failable and the plausible. Plausible will result in us talking for an hour or two or three between us, between the game team, and they are incredibly time consuming.
Not least because at the end of the day, we are careful about making a decision if two of us aren't in agreement, and we ideally want all three of us.
At the end of the day, this will be introducing the example I gave of the divination ritual outside the battlefield. That was one like this. Mm. It was a new effect that could make sense within our game, but it's a case of, do we want it to make sense and can we support it? Because at the end of the day, the existing rituals do not cover every possible scenario, and nor have we considered every possible scenario. Again, it's just not possible.
I'm just trying to think what other common, if there's any other common category see off my end. Eternal related rituals are an entire category from my point of view. For obvious reasons, because I'm often the one who has to argue about them.
Yeah.
I like the bit where they say, we know the Eternal hasn't consented, but, because that makes it much easier, because I don't have to go back and find out if the Eternal has consented or not.
Yeah. Alas, it's often not quite that simple. Frequently, it's like, it's much more phrased along the lines of, it's really important that Sadogwa gets to see this. Mm. Alas, how important something is does not actually trump the rules of magic, as it were. Such rules exist.
The obvious page for me to call out at this point is ritual theory. Your first port of call when you are looking to do an arcane projection is to read over the page on the wiki called Ritual Theory. It lays out some of the laws of magic that give some insight into how some of our broader guidelines, although even then, you've got to remember they are guidelines. They're not hard and fast rules. You can't say, because the law of dominion, I must be able to create this effect, for example. But the bit that's also quite useful looking at is one that we've been doing our best to keep updated over the course of the last year or so, is the limits of magic. They're often much more specific than the laws of magic, but we try and call out specific things that don't work. Once we've had them a couple of times, it's not really workable and not something we want to do to call out every failed arcane projection.
Yeah,
but when we get a common recurring theme, which is often the case, when we get a common recurring theme, we try and call out the fact that it isn't workable. So it's worth keeping an eye on that. Part of this has been made a lot easier by our streamlining our feedback system. We now, any failed arcane projection and a small handful of successful arcane projections will have a little bit of text trying to explain why the arcane projection has failed. Graham and I write that initially, and it normally consists of a line of text explaining why we're failing it. I'm trying to pick my words so careful.
One of us, let's say me, I am quite blunt in my descriptions as to why something fails. Matt will then carefully and at length turn that into something that is readable by a human being.
It's why we keep him around, like I said. He's good at talking to actual humans. And that often forms the basis, is what I was trying to get to, of the bit we'll then later put on the ritual theory page on the wiki saying this theme doesn't work. And it also helps to make us a bit more consistent. Although the problem with consistency, I often consider with arcane projections, is we are trying to be internally consistent backstage, but it is not always obvious what our basis for that consistency is.
It's relatively common for a number of arcane projections to try and shave a bit off of what is existing. Because obviously, any arcane projection is trying to do something new.
Yeah.
If it was trying to do something that already existed, there'd be no point in doing it.
Indeed, one of the reasons we'll sometimes fail an arcane projection with a full refund is to say, this ritual already exists, here it is.
Yeah, I've done that.
So, what do we want to talk about next?
Well, we can go through some of the other questions that people asked online, if you like.
Yeah, I think that's not a terrible idea.
I've stripped the names off of these, all sorts of reasons.
And to be fair, we got asked similar questions by several people.
We did. So the next question on my list, when an AP involves two or more resonances, how do you decide which realm it should be in? So first up, that's not technically a thing we do. Arcane projections are submitted with a realm. The realm is determined by the submitting player. However, that wasn't quite what the question was looking to ask. It was just weirdly the way it was phrased. So more usefully, when something seems to have two resonances, it frequently doesn't. There'll be one that's linked to the effect and one that's linked to the flavor. So the person who asked the question usefully provided some examples. So I'm going to use those examples. So top of their list was a spore-based illness. So the effect here is the illness. That's a winter effect. The spores are the flavor. And that is absolutely a spring flavor. But it isn't actually a particularly appropriate flavor for winter. But the effect is a winter effect. And you cannot get a winter effect out of spring by providing spring flavor to the effect, if that makes sense. If that was submitted now, if it was a spring ritual, I would probably fail it for a half refund.
And I would want to include a note saying, to create this sort of effect using spring magic, you may wish to speak to the Eternal Lothir.
Your other option, if they'd submitted it in winter, I would probably want to try and pass it, but I would be trying to remove the spore elements from the actual ritual.
I think it's fair to say that a regular place where you and I come into a disagreement is over that tension between the in-character flavor and the out-of-character effect.
Yeah. And on a basic level, the crunchier the ritual is, the more I will win those arguments.
Fair.
And the less crunchy the ritual is, the more I will win those arguments. On a crucial basis there, how important is the crunch to the ritual? So at the point at which you're trying to create some kind of gigantic plague across a territory, the crunch effect is actually relatively important because that is the plague. Whereas if you were just trying to have spores rain across the territory and maybe there might be some disease, then all of a sudden the theme of the ritual is more important than the more crunchy effect. So Andy's likely to win out on that.
We're back to art, not science again. So I would counter argue that a spring ritual effect that uses spores to spread sickness is very much within spring's purview. Spreading sickness, look at Rivers Run Red, for example, and all the venom stuff that we do.
Spreading sickness, yes. Creating it in the first place, not so much. Okay. But yes, this is the kind of argument that would go on.
The kind of argument that would go on, yes, good point.
And, the other example they had was a scary deception. That's actually all they put on that one. So I've got a little less to go on. But at a guess, and possibly from memories of rituals half remembered, I think this ritual will have been an attempt to use illusions to scare a person, army or populace or whatever. So the effect here is the fear being caused, which is a winter effect, is explicitly a winter effect. Flavor used is illusions, which do indeed have a lot of night resonance. But that's not the effect, that's the flavor. And again, if you're the crunchier that you're going for it, the more likely it is that the effect is going to be what's important. I'd probably pass this in winter, but I'd remove or tone down the illusions aspect.
We talk about that a little bit. We'd certainly play down the idea of flat-out illusions, but I can certainly see a version of it where it heightens people's fear of what might be lurking in the unknown, etc., etc.
Yeah, the stuff at the corner of your eye, that sort of thing. I'd see that. If it was in night, I'd want to discuss it at length, and we'd probably either pass it and fail it, or fail it, depending on the scale.
If I was honest, I would suggest that actually the emotions resonance in night is misleading sometimes. I'm thinking we see that a little bit. If you've got something that is supposed to encourage someone to feel heroic, that's obviously a much better resonance with summer than it is with night. Oh, can I call out a common problem with arcane projections to do with resonance?
Yes, you absolutely can.
Okay. When you're describing the in-character crunch of your ritual, there is a common mistake I see where people try and explain how it fits with all the resonances of a given realm is listed on their appropriate magic page, or try and call out three or four of them at once. And I have to say, arcane projections that do this often end up too complicated, using too many words to try and explain something. You would have been much better off picking the key resonance and explaining in a few lines about why that is key to the functioning of your ritual. Multiple resonances and additional stuff doesn't make a ritual more likely to pass. I would say that is fair.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
Pick a strong one that is clear and call that out when you're doing an arcane projection. I don't want to read an arcane projection which talks about how this night ritual inspires emotions of intuition and transformation to obfuscate the truth. There's a question about who arcane projections are for, to be honest, what their purpose in the game is.
There is.
Is it worth talking about that for a little bit?
I've resolved to let you answer that.
I know you've resolved to let me answer that question. So let's think about it. So we want to promote player agency, the ability to do things in the game. That we know from the start. We want a mechanism for players to make up magical effects that will enhance their game and the game of other players. What we don't want is a situation where people are spontaneously creating ritual effects that we have to judge in some fashion, because we're largely not fans of that. We want to be able to spend a bit of time thinking about them and what they'll add to the game. We don't want a rich situation where the solution to every problem is to do a ritual. And we don't want magic to be the best way to do everything in the game. Those are all starting points for us with arcane projections. But we still want players to be able to occasionally surprise us with creativity or inventiveness in addressing a situation on the field.
There's almost not an event goes by where I don't see an arcane projection, which is new and interesting and innovative, that even though it's not something we thought of, that I do want to give it a try, and this is an interesting thing that we'd at least like to talk about doing. We don't always let them go by. We don't always pass them, but we do always talk about them.
And and keeping that balance between, I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I'm a terrible person. It is worth sitting through any number of I cast this ritual and then we win for the rituals we get that are actually interesting and meaty and we think will make the game better. I think that's fair. And that's what Arcane Projections are for, I think, for me.
Yeah, that's fair. Some other questions? Should we do a quick, got some quick, relatively rapid fire questions?
Yeah, let's do some quick rapid fire ones. I'll keep quiet. You answer.
At what point does an AP need an Eternal to work?
And you start with the one where I'm not going to let you answer. Go on.
Yep, that's correct. On you go, Andy. You take it.
Okay, so we've already touched on this a couple of times. There's a couple of things where you need, and it needs to be in advance as well. We tried doing Arcane Projections where we said, this Arcane Projection won't work unless you get the approval of the Eternal. And they were unsatisfying because you don't get a half refund on those. And often, when they went past, I'd be sat there thinking, I'm pretty confident that Eternal is not going to consent to that ritual. So you need the consent of an Eternal to bring anything across from the realms. That means troops or castles or magical forests. You need the support of an Eternal if you want to try and duplicate a power that is connected with their particular purview. The obvious example for this is winter is not normally associated with creating out-of-control forest fires, but the Winter Eternal Surat has a propensity for out-of-control forest fires. So you can use winter magic to allow Surat to unleash some of his unspeakable forest fires into a woodland full of delicate animals and beautiful art. And the final one, which is the most obvious one, I should have actually, is communicating with an Eternal, sending them messages, sending them items, asking them to meet because there are matters of which they must speak. All of those require the consent of the Eternal in advance. And part of the reason that is the case is that if you're in a situation to get the approval of the Eternal to give you a communication ritual, you could just ask them whatever it is you want the communication ritual for and save us all a lot of heartache.
There's also, whenever we put a ritual like that into the game, there is a certain amount of out of character, not problems, but certainly a number of out of character concerns that we have to look at. If an Eternal says they will read and respond to every missive that they get, then that means that we need to actually manage that on an out of character basis behind the scenes, which we already do for a couple of Eternals. But if we add more Eternals to that list, that's more and more workload for more and more crew behind the scenes.
And more expectation management. We could do an entire podcast on communication with Eternals. It's a constant topic of discussion backstage about how we can best handle that. There are a few other places where it seems odd that you need an Eternal, but you do. The obvious example I'm thinking of now is the enchantments that improve your ability to cast magic.
Yep.
It was always in my mind that they used Eternals, but when they were initially written up, not all of them were clear on it. We recently did a pass through them and made it absolutely explicit that all of the rituals that make you better at casting realm magic are using the assistance of an Eternal. I can't really put into mechanical terms why that is the case. It's mostly, I think, a flavor and setting decision on my part. But there's a couple of things like that. It needs an Eternal, mostly in those broad categories, and occasionally we will suggest you might be able to create an effect that you can't create directly with the assistance of an Eternal. I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fair.
Cool.
So the next question, why so few solo castable APs? So bear in mind that Arcane Projections work off the same rules as regular, and these are balanced on the basis that they're cast with mastery. One of the main reasons for that is that they can be turned into mastered rituals. That means that whilst it may seem that like, oh, this effect, I want to be able to cast this effect by myself, and maybe you would be after it had been codified and you'd mastered the ritual. But as an Arcane Projection, that's not necessarily going to be the case. And the design of Arcane Projections is not necessarily for you to be able to go and solo cast this ritual. There are rituals that exist that you will be able to solo cast. That is absolutely going to be possible. But if you go and look at the list of rituals that exist on the system that are magnitude 4 or less in some cases, you'll see that they are not necessarily the most potent or interesting of rituals. So they're not so likely to become something that you are looking to put through an Arcane Projection. But it has happened. Go on, Andy.
No, I have nothing particularly to add on that one. We don't really think about who is going to cast an Arcane Projection when we're working out the magnitude on it.
Yeah, it's important to think. We need to balance the effect. We are not simply saying someone is going to want to solo cast this, so let's pull the magnitude down by 10 just so that they can. That is not how our costings work. So, the next paraphrase question, why is the process so long? At the end of the day, each new ritual text, and this is drifting off of Arcane Projections and onto ritual texts, Each new ritual text adds extra rules to the game. And when you're onto ritual texts, those are permanent rules to the game. We cannot easily take a ritual text back out of the system, particularly not if it's... We've made mistakes. Some of which were that we mentioned earlier in the podcast. Some of the parts was calculated with an incorrect formula when it was originally put out, so that caused some problems. And even at the initial creation of the game, we got the scaling wrong on Bound by Common Cause, and we had to make an amendment to that. And at the end of the day, making amendments to rules which exist on the wiki causes problems and causes confusion and requires us to manage stuff. Causing rules changes on a document that exists in the tent of someone who we don't even know who they are at the moment, that is really hard for us to do. So it's important for us to go through a proper review process. And the first stage of that proper review process is the arcane projection, where we do need to sit and take the time and look at each individually. Next question is, how many duplicate arcane projections do we get? We actually get quite a lot of duplicate arcane projections in a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's an incident on the field, so something has happened with regards to Rykos, and so everyone is submitting very similar looking rituals to try and provide a solution to that. Sometimes they're completely independent of each other. Sometimes they're just very similar in theme. Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons to why we get a lot of duplicate arcane projections, but it doesn't actually mean it's all from the same person or even from the same group or nation. It can be all sorts of people just submitting different things in reaction, usually to the same in-game event.
There's even an argument about what counts as a duplicate. I can have several circumstances where we've had in the same submission period an arcane projection that looks similar but is subtly different.
Yeah.
Either in its flavor, which can have a dramatic effect on the actual outcome of the arcane projection submission, or in the precise details of what the player is asking for mechanically.
Yeah. One thing I did want to note on this is where I personally, from my seat, have become a little wary of people submitting duplicate arcane projections, which is when someone will submit 6 copies of the same arcane projection simultaneously. That makes me quite worried. A notable advantage of arcane projections from our point of view is that if we do make a mistake on the arcane projection, the impact on the game is relatively limited if we fix that mistake before we pass it or fail it again. But if someone submits 6 copies of the same ritual, we get a lot more wary about if we should or should not pass that ritual. And let's be clear, we probably lean a little bit heavier on the perhaps we shouldn't pass this. Perhaps we should only pass one of these if it is something a little bit more out of the ordinary. Because if we make a mistake there, all of a sudden this isn't a one-off chance and only a limited amount of damage that can be caused. It can be a lot more damage that 6 copies of the arcane projection can cause. That, incidentally, is also why there is no arcane projection that will allow you to copy an arcane projection. And yes, that is another one we get submitted about 2 or 3 a year.
Next on the list is something about submitting Vega rituals, which is about the whole submission process in a way, but you start.
So there were a number of questions that seem to have been asked within this question. It was a bit of an odd one, depending on how you look at it. So one thing I wanted to hit up on here is that it's quite important to understand the rules, not just of ritual magic and arcane projections and how that works, but also the rules of what you're trying to affect. Campaign rituals and army rituals are quite vulnerable to this here, because obviously they do have some quite crunchy rules involved in the background. And we have had a good few rituals submitted over the years, which are basically from someone who clearly understands the magic game and understands how all of this works, doesn't understand the military game. And they're often quite open with us that they don't understand the military game. They will say something like, I just want an effect. I don't know what it is. I don't know how this effect would be, but this is roughly how I want it to be. And sometimes we can infer things from that, and sometimes we can't. For example, bolstering the spirits of the warriors might improve the number of victory points gained by the army. Encouraging them to be more cautious in their action will give access to an order that allows them to be more cautious in their attacks or something like that. But as soon as you write, encourages the soldiers to contemplate the nature of the labyrinth, and don't provide any details as to what kind of mechanical effect you want, I need to somehow translate that into a mechanical effect. And as you can imagine, the main effect that that has is that I get a headache.
We also tend to follow the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
So if you want your army, if you want your create a ritual effect that causes an army to be more cautious, for example, the first place we're going to go and look is what existing army orders exist.
Yeah.
we are much more likely to say this army can now take an order that it couldn't take previously that already exists than we are to make a new order from scratch.
Yeah, we generally, for arcane projections, we don't generally make up fresh orders. Generally, I'm not saying universally. Armies have stat, and at the end of the day, the ways you can affect them, you can change their victory points gained, their casualties caused, their casualties taken, and the speed of the army. Other than that, there's very little things that you can mechanically do, other than once you get into sort of slightly out of combat abilities, like information gained or something. Basically, that's all you can do. So when you try and... It's important to... What I'm trying to say here, it's important to understand what you are trying to affect. Because if you don't understand what you're trying to affect with your ritual that you're casting, it is quite hard for us to try and interpret what you want from the ritual.
Whereas on the flip side, from my point of view, I'm much more comfortable with people who are being a bit vague about the out-of-character mechanics of their ritual than I am about people who are being vague about the in-character method. Because I feel it's much easier for us to find a way to reflect this soldiers will tend to be more cautious than it is for us to create from whole cloth the in-character method whereby those soldiers are made more cautious. I would be much more resistant to a ritual that is, we're using summer magic, we want the soldiers to be more cautious, and here is the mechanical effect, than I would with, we're using summer magic to make people think about their homes and things like that, and we think this will make the army more cautious.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with you, but...
Yeah, I know you don't. But that is what I wanted to call out, the fact that we have different attitudes to vagueness, depending on where it is.
Sure. The crunchier the effect, though, the more important it is that you be clear.
Fair, but the crunchier the effect is, the more important that it also fits in with the way you are describing it in your in-character.
Oh, absolutely. It's important that your flavour matches what your actual mechanical effect is doing, if that makes sense. The next question is, what details should be put in and what details should be left for PD to decide? So the main thing that I think is important to let us decide is magnitude. We occasionally get the odd ritual that is submitted that has to be this magnitude. Sometimes that reason is because they've looked at other rituals and they've decided that that is where the power level of this ritual is. Or sometimes it's simply because, and I have seen this, because that is how big our coven is, and it would be unfair if we couldn't cast this army buff ritual with our coven. Which, that one was particularly unfortunate, because particularly when you're trying to affect something as large as an army, there's a floor below which the magnitude of a ritual is not going to affect. A magnitude 15 ritual is never going to affect an army level campaign effect. But it's important to know that we cost our rituals based off of, to an extent, spreadsheets and formulas for the crunchier stuff, and a standard boilerplate for the more flavor-filled stuff. But it's not possible for you to simply say, this is what our ritual is going to cost. The costing is our purview. We need to do the costing on it. Andy, other thoughts on the detail to be put in?
It's an odd one, because obviously what we like is our arcane projections to be concise, but we want enough detail that we actually can see what you're trying to do, what you're both in and out of character, what you're trying to do. So there's a happy medium to be split between two lines that doesn't give us enough to work with and 14 paragraphs. And I'm not sure where it is. My gut feeling is about three paragraphs of in-character text, one paragraph of out-of-character.
I think three paragraphs might be a little long, but generally, yeah, I think that's a reasonable guideline. It is worth noting, though, that you can end up in a weird situation where you've managed to hit both those bases. As I have seen someone who submitted, no joke, must have been three sides of A4, but at the end of which neither Matt, Andy, nor I could work out what they actually wanted to do with their ritual. It's important to be clear on the background, on the flavor of your ritual, and on the rules that you're looking to get to, but without necessarily overpowering it with your entire group's history, your entire group's family's history, and the history of your entire, where your group is from.
We're mocking, but realistically, what our problem is we're dealing with 80 of these in an event.
Yeah.
And we have to read them all, and we have to treat each one as an individual submission. So from an out-of-character admin point of view, clarity and conciseness are the two most important things that help us start the assessment of an arcane projection. What you are trying to do with the magic, how you are trying to do it, what realm you're using. If we have to wade through a lot of text to try and find those pieces of information, it makes it much harder for us to give a good arcane projection response.
Yep. I think that's all of the questions that I wanted to provide answers to.
It's not an easy subject, and there's a lot of design stuff around it, which is tricky for us to cover in a podcast that we're hoping is going to stay short, positive, and upbeat. There is more support stuff to be done. I had a look over the Arcane Projection submission interface on the database earlier and was surprised to discover that we don't give you much context on there about what actually we're looking for within character information and out of character information on that. So that's something we can look at. The ritual theory page continues to slowly evolve. A few other bits and bobs like that. I was going to try 5 quick pointers for people who are looking at doing arcane projections.
Yep.
Do you think we can get that together, Alice? So let me start a couple of them. 1, drawbacks don't make rituals easy to cast. That's a pretty clear one. If a ritual requires the caster must lose a body hit or become venomed, that doesn't actually make the ritual easy to cast. It just adds to the flavor and coolness of the ritual. So I'm keen on them. Other people involved in the process slightly less so. Clearness and conciseness. Don't try and waffle. Don't try and convince us with weight of words that we should pass your arcane projection, because it's probably not going to work and might actually count against you, because we're having to wade through multiple paragraphs of stuff to make a decision about whether an arcane projection should work. Know the area of the game you're dealing with. This can be off-putting for new players. It doesn't need to be, but it can be. If you want to create an arcane projection that works on one of our existing systems, you need to at least somewhat understand how that system works. And more importantly, you need to look at our rituals and see how they work, and our magical theory pages, and more importantly, perhaps, the rough descriptions about what each realm can do. 4, manage your expectations. An arcane projection is a piece of bonus content. I think it's fair to say nobody actually needs an arcane projection. And we will always err on the side of caution when we're creating an arcane projection, because we are introducing something into the game that has the possibility to be disruptive. Please don't put in arcane projections you don't intend to cast.
Yeah, we see those occasionally. The standard, this isn't an arcane projection I have any intent to cast. I want to see if it is possible. As we've mentioned earlier, that is not a thing arcane projections can do.
The best you can discover from trying to do magical theory exploration with an arcane projection is that we have passed that arcane projection at that event for that specific use you have outlined. If you extrapolate the laws of magic from that, you are onto a non-starter. And partly we've done this because the game is not about exploring the complex restrictions of magical theory. We ran that game. And it was fun, but that's not one of our guidelines. And secondly, it's because we might change our mind between one event and the next about whether a certain type of effect is workable or not, or we might discover after the fact that it conflicts with something. So please do not use an arcane projection to try and create precedent for the way the game world works. That's 5 points, I think.
Yeah, that's 5 points.
Should we leave it there? Is there anything else we want to mention?
No, I think that's just about everything I wanted to hit up. Anyway, thank you for joining us. I've been Graham Jimison, and this has been Andy Raff, who I do not believe actually mentioned his name on the podcast at all. Good night.